The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is episode number 310 of the world's most dangerous podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. With me again this week, your friend and mine, and the author of The Big 50, The Minute Moments That Made the Cincinnati Reds, Chris Garber. How are you, Chris?
Well, let's make it clear I'm the author of the odd-numbered pages only.
Exactly. It was a really – I don't know why we decided to do it that way. That was a strange way to structure that book.
It was tricky. It was tricky.
My first idea was we just alternate words. And that wouldn't have worked. No. So I do have actually a big 50 story to tell as we start here, but we've got some good spring training discussion coming up. Pitchers and catchers reported, obviously, this week, and everybody's kind of excited about the Reds, and we're going to get excited in just one moment. But tonight I was performing my duties as a father, as I do occasionally. My daughter had a performance at the school that I went to enjoy, and I got a text while I'm there. And the text was from a buddy of mine. It says, hey, can I get two copies of the book signed? I said, sure, whatever. And then in his next text is, I'm having dinner with Jeff Reed.
Jeff Reed, former backup catcher.
Yes.
Jeff Reed.
Yes. Jeff Reed. This was completely random. And then he sends me a picture of they're having like an auction, a silent auction. This guy's son plays for some, he's a really good baseball player, and he plays for a school near where Jeff Reed's from, Elizabethton, Tennessee. And that the school's evidently near there. And they were having like a silent auction or something. And he was sitting with Jeff Reed. And then he sends me this picture. He was bidding on catching gear worn by Jeff Reed during the 1990 World Series year. And it's, you know, it's the chest protector and the shin guards, the mask, and a pair of cleats.
So Jeff Reed hung on to this stuff for 30 years and now is ready to part with it.
Or he went down to Dick's Sporting Goods and picked up a set. And
dragged it around the driveway for a little bit. Right. It looks stuffed up, yeah.
It really does. The picture looks like you know, what he would have worn back then. And the cleats are made by Pony. So that's pretty impressive.
Pony. Pete Rose a pony guy for a while.
Oh, well, I don't even need to know what that means.
The dog-faced pony soldier.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. somebody used that term to me before I'd heard. Well, we're not going to get into that. But anyway, later on in the evening, I'm sitting there watching, and he says, I'm the proud owner of catching gear now. So he won the – maybe I'll get a chance to view this.
You think he traded it for two copies of the Big 50?
Maybe that's what he was suggesting. You think?
I hope so.
I hope so, too, but I'm not going to count on it. But, hey, that'd be an even trade as far as I'm concerned.
That really improves our our market value of our book, really.
Really, it's impressive. It's like those questions you always see. He had $100,000 in 1902, and that's worth, you know, $70 billion today.
Right.
2020 value of the Big 50 is Jeff Reed catching gear.
It's right. It's much more valuable than it was in 2018.
Well, it was Eddie Toppinsey catching gear at that time, if you remember. I don't know. The pitchers and catchers have reported to spring training, Chris. Usually I'm pretty excited by this news, and I guess this year, I don't know. I'm worried. I'm kind of worried. I mean, a worry wart, I guess. The Reds are supposed to be good this year, or at least better, and we've had our hopes up so many times. Is that the wrong perspective to take as pitchers and catchers report to Goodyear, Arizona?
Well, so what you're telling me is that because the Reds might be good for a change, you're less excited about spring training than you are normally.
I think I'm just more afraid of being let down. In the past, I would expect the Reds to be good and I'd be optimistic, but kind of in the back of my head, I was like, well, you know, they're probably not going to be. This year, they still might not be, but everyone kind of expects them to be. And it's a weird situation. I mean, it's been a while for us as Reds fans.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I don't know. I'm not nervous yet. I'm, I don't know, expecting good things, but we've had disappointments before, so baseball is fun in any event.
There you go. There you go. Thank you for shaming me for my angst over
I was the, trying to talk you back down.
I appreciate that. That's what I count on you for. So we're not the only ones that are kind of excited about the Reds. It's been one of the most interesting off seasons since I've been a Reds fan, which is 72 years now I've been a Reds fan. And this is one of the most interesting winters we've ever had. And news came out this week. It's not really news, I guess, but Baseball Prospectus every year, they have their PECOTA projections. And they came out with their projection system this year, and they projected the Reds as the most likely winner in the National League Central. Had the Cubs at second, and I think Cardinals, Brewers, Pirates was the way it went. So, but had the Reds as the most likely winner of the National League Central. Now, I did project them to finish just 86-76, which actually seems pretty reasonable to me. But it projects the Cubs at 85 wins and so on. But they run these projections, the simulations, like a bunch of times, and the Reds are projected to win the National League Central 47.3% of the time and make the playoffs in 66% of the simulations. Now, that's a little bit matrixy for some of you. I understand. But what do you think about the fact that the Reds are actually, in some respects, the favorite in the National League Central? I mean, you can make that argument.
That's pretty cool. You know, that's pretty cool. I've certainly felt and said on this radio program before that I believe the rest of the division has gone backwards, and the Reds have gone quite a bit forward. So it sounds right to me.
Yeah, I mean, 86 sounds about the neighborhood where I kind of feel like they are, but I think that, you know, they could be, go up to 91, 92, or they could drop back to, you know, 77 or something, you know. But, you know, it's projections. You can take your PECOTA projections and a dime and get a cup of coffee in 1898. I'm not sure that's how that phrase goes. I don't know.
I like it.
But, you know, it's just a projection. But most of the time, well, last year the Reds were pretty good in the projections. And didn't end up doing so well. So, I don't know. Reason for me to worry, I guess. Being a worry wart, as my mother would say. She's, by the way, the only listener to this podcast.
Hello, Mrs. D.
So, anyway, 86 and 76, I'm not quite sure that gets you to the division championship. But maybe, because I think you may be right. Everybody else has kind of moved back, haven't they?
Yeah, I think 80, I mean, they all move back a bit, but other than the Pittsburgh Pirates, I don't know that any team's going to be actively bad in the NL Central. So I think there will be kind of a cluster in that 76 to 86 win zone.
Yeah, I could see so many different scenarios.
They have a good shot there.
Yeah, you know, I could see four teams really be fighting all year long. That's not unreasonable at all. I could see one team, any of those four, getting hot at the right time and kind of taking control of the division. So I don't know what to expect. I just like the fact that the Reds are actually in the mix and everyone kind of agrees with that. Some other news from the week, and really not a ton of real news. One big piece of news off the top here. Eugenio Suarez. Now, I know that you are a fan of Eugenio Suarez, Chris, in particular. He's your favorite current starting third baseman for the Reds. I know this because we've discussed it.
True.
The news got an update on his condition. You know, he had the shoulder surgery from a cannonball in the pool gone awry, and he a lot of speculation he wouldn't be ready for opening day. The latest update is that he's recovering well, surgery went well, and it's realistic, is the quote. It's realistic that he could be ready to play on opening day. That's pretty big news, it seems like to me, because we have all these scenarios. Where, what are the Reds going to do while he's gone and, you know, moving people around? And I was looking forward to seeing what happens, but I'd rather have Suarez.
I would support that. I would rather have him too.
I threw it to you for you to say Suarez is good. That's not a very good host of me. I didn't really give you anything to discuss there. but the thing I did want to discuss with you is something that Jason Linden and I discussed last week. We were talking about our pre-spring training projections for the roster. And we did one projection, then the other projection was, well, what if Suarez is not ready? And my suggestion was Senzel at second, Moustakas at third, and you keep both Phil Irvin and Aristides Aquino in the outfield in that circumstance. You have any thoughts on what the Reds should do if he's not ready for opening day? Say he's going to be 3 weeks or a month out. How would you structure the roster to cover that?
All right, so here's what I think about that. I don't think there's – the only way they're going to move Nick Senzel to second base is if someone came to them today and said that Suarez is out until the middle of May. And that's – I think that's the problem with that scenario is there's – knowing how this stuff goes, any delay of Suarez's return is going to be in 1 week at a time – news. You know what I mean? He's going to be almost back. He's going to work out. Oh, he had a setback. Oh, he's going to try baseball activities. Okay, they're going to rest him a week. It's never going to be long enough where they say, you know what, let's move Senzel over there and get him up to speed and give him some time to work out at second base. So for that reason, I think you're more likely to see like Josh Van Meter or Derek Dietrich make the team and play second base and just move Moustakas over there.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's a short-term thing, you're probably right. Maybe we'll get a bit of a clue to see where Senzel's working out this spring. By the way, the news from this week as well is that Senzel is absolutely doing well and should be good to go after his shoulder surgery. I like that you referenced the possibility of a Nick Massett / Sean Marshall memorial setback in the recovery.
Yeah.
You can be out one more week.
That's it.
You know. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I feel like you weaken your lineup a little bit by not being able to, you know, putting a guy. I was thinking Josh Van Meter, but the other news one of the other items of news is that Derek Dietrich did sign a minor league contract with the Reds, and he'll get an invite to Major League spring training. So Dietrich is back. Yeah, under your scenario, I was suggesting they keep Senzel on the infield temporarily. And that solves, at least early in the year, this clog in the outfield by allowing them to keep both Irvin and Aquino. But under your scenario, one of Irvin and Aquino has to go in the outfield. I think I don't want to speak for you, but and then Dietrich takes that spot at least temporarily. So
I think unless they do something where they somehow sacrifice a backup infielder to have that 16th outfielder on the roster.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I just feel like they're really hesitant to move Nick Senzel to the infield.
I think that's absolutely what all the evidence has shown, that they want to put him in center field and or in the outfield at least, but certainly in center field and let him stick there for as long as possible. But, you know, David Bell did make one stray comment after Nick Castellanos was signed. And that suggested that Senzel could see some time on the infield. That made me think, well, maybe, but there's nothing that the Reds have ever done that made me think it's a realistic possibility. And, you know, I had an opportunity to speak to Nick Senzel. I mentioned this on the podcast. I had an opportunity to speak to him for a piece that I'm writing for Cincinnati Magazine. And this was before they had signed Akiyama when I talked to him. And he said the Reds basically had told him, center field, we want you to have a place to concentrate on coming into a spring for the first time, because they've shifted him around to four different positions in the last 4 years. And he liked that. He liked having some certainty about what he needed to be working on. And now maybe that certainty's not there for him. I don't know. We'll see when they start playing some games, I guess. Who do you keep in the outfield if you are making this roster? Here's what I proposed was, I actually send Irvin out. I keep Senzel, Akiyama, Castellanos, Winker, and Aquino. And then you can, you know, mix and match with that group. You keep Irvin over Aquino. I think it probably comes down to that.
No, I don't. I thought I was going to be the one disagreeing with you there, because I think I'm the same way. I'm probably low man on Philip Irvin. He's fine.
Yeah, he's fine.
He did a good job last year, but I just don't see what is proven by sending Aristides Aquino back to AAA. And he's the guy, like I've said before, he's the guy who could win an MVP.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if I want to say that, but you're right. What's the ceiling on him and what's the ceiling on Irvin? And if you're looking for a situation where you're trying to do a timeshare out there, Irvin is adequate. He reminds me of Bill McNeil from the old news radio show where he celebrated being named adequate. And he bathed in his adequacivity. Or something like that. There's a little 90s sitcom reference for you there.
Bill McNeil.
Bill, the real deal with Bill McNeil. The first time I've ever sung on the podcast, right there.
Rocket Fuel, Malt Liquor.
Oh, man, what a great show. If you haven't seen that show, that is one of the funniest shows. That's one of the five funniest sitcoms in the history of the medium. But, yeah, I think that you and I are probably certainly in the minority with respect to Urban versus Aquino. I don't see the – I think Urban would be fine. I don't mind having him. You know, if he's just hitting against left-handed pitchers, okay. You know, he's athletic. He's not a great defender, but he's athletic. But with Aquino, I don't know. I like having that bat off the bench. And if you're looking to do a timeshare, he just has a much higher ceiling than Phillip Urban. And I don't think you give up anything defensively. I think Aquino is a better defensive player, at least not worse.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if they're not, if neither one of them is going to really play, if it's going to be your fifth or sixth outfielder, then maybe I can buy let Aquino have some at bats in Louisville. But if you're going to get one of these guys actually on the field somewhat frequently, I think it's got to be Aquino.
I'd rather have 350 at bats of Aquino or whatever you get in a part time role than have him in AAA for what reason? I mean, I guess let him play regularly. Is he going to get better? Maybe. I don't know. They know better than me. But that's the way I would go. Now, the other bit of news that came out, I think just today, maybe yesterday, Tucker Barnhart, he's the one of the Reds' catching duo, and he has decided that he's officially giving up switch hitting. We talked for years about whether Billy Hamilton should do that, and I think we came to the conclusion that Billy Hamilton should stop hitting from the left side, and also he should stop hitting from the right side of the plate.
Start running.
Go ahead and run.
Just run first and see what happens.
It could happen. Tucker Barnhart was taking batting practice today against a left-handed batting practice pitcher, and he was hitting left-handed. And so he officially confirmed that, he's done with right-handed hitting, which is probably a pretty good idea because I think his in the majors, his slash line from the right side of the plate, .220 batting average, .297 on base, .296 slugging. I mean, at some point, he's adequate from the other side of the plate. For the left hand side of the play, what took him so long? And I guess I know it gives you some flexibility if you can play both, and maybe help you make some money at some point. But if you can't actually hit from the right side of the plate, I'm not sure it helps you any. So
And technically speaking, those are not exactly his numbers as against right handed pitching, because he did try five times to bat lefty against left-handed pitching.
How do you do in those five?
0-for-5 with two strikeouts.
Oh, well, that's not encouraging.
Not so much. Yeah, I mean, but you put him against right-handed pitching.
Yeah.
And he's a, 258, 336, 391 hitter. That's legit.
Absolutely. And now if you got more of a strict platoon with him and Kurt Casale, because Casale is right-handed, I think that's That's not a bad platoon. It won't be a straight platoon. I'm sure Casale will get some time against right-handers as well, but because there's so many more of them. But I don't know. I wanted them to upgrade that position, but I'm talking myself into being okay with that just because I don't see that many catching tandems around the league that are that much better than Casale and Barnhart. Or am I wrong about that? Am I just liking our guys more? I mean,
I think you're liking your guys a little bit. I mean, they've had better kind of platoon type combos, back in the day when David Ross was around, or
Ramon Hernandez,
Ryan Hannigan. I mean, they've had better combinations, but these guys are going to be what they're going to be. I mean, there's no Johnny Bench ain't walking through that door.
He might.
Taubman's not walking through that door.
Oh, Eddie Taubman. Now, Taubman's, he could hit. We'll give him that. I compared him unfavorably to Jeff Reed for some reason earlier. Now, I think about that. That's not really a great comparison. Jeff Reed was a fine backup catcher, but, I don't know. I don't see that many catching tandems around the league that are that great. And I'm not suggesting that ours is that great, but maybe the word of the day, of course, is adequate. Maybe they can be adequate. And I'm willing to bet that they won't be the worst catchers in the league. What's a low bar to cross? What did you think about Dietrich coming back? What it said to me was, just like last year, there is no market for Derek Dietrich. I mean, he's a fun guy. Love that guy. And he was good for a couple months. But I would have
I remember that sad prediction I made last, June, that he was going to get hit by a pitch more than he hit home runs the rest of the year. And I was kidding.
And you were right.
I was joking around, Derek. Didn't mean you really do it.
Yeah. Even after, I mean, I guess for the full season, he was about a league average hitter. You know, 328 on base, 462 slugging.
Yeah, but that's not how you want to get to it, is it?
It's not. I mean, he was amazing for 2 months and then awful for the rest of the year and then hurt. I don't know. I just, he seems like a pretty good, somewhat flexible bench guy that you can play around the league, around the diamond a little bit anyway. And he's got some pop. And for two straight years, no one's been very interested in his services. And maybe it's just because he can't really play defense that well and there's no real place to put him. I don't know. But I'm glad to have him back, but just because he's fun. Supposed to be fun.
Yeah, I
right?
guess he is fun. I guess he's fun. I kind of got. Maybe it's because he wasn't hitting anymore, and I was kind of like, "All right, let's tone down the costumes." You hit some more home runs.
It wore a little thin. You didn't like when he mimicked being a beekeeper on the field. Come on,
I think I like that. You know, I've got a soft spot for bees inside the Red Stadium.
Ooh,
so
you are the expert on bees inside the Red Stadium.
I know. You know, beekeeping is a kind of job that should have a different name. You know, like a stamp collector is a philatelist.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Someone who make, you know, call somebody a barrel maker. You call them a cooper. Well, there ought to be another name. Maybe there is. I just don't know it. But there ought to be a name for a beekeeper.
There should be. I watched a good documentary about beekeeping.
Oh, was it the one with all the kids? Where they all practice their words and then they have to say them in front of the...
That is a great documentary. But no, unfortunately, it was not a spelling bee.
Oh.
There is a good spelling bee documentary. What's that one called? Spellbound. That's a really good one, about 15 years old. Now, I watched one that it was nominated for Best Foreign Film, or that's Best International Film, whatever it's called now, and Best Documentary at the Oscars this year. I know you listen to my Oscars podcast, Chris, so you already know this, but it's called Honeyland. It's this woman in North Macedonia who kept bees, and it was amazing. Amazing documentary. So
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. Well, you're the bee guy.
Oh, they are. All right. I just researched this. They are called an apiarist.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They have something like called an apiary, I believe it's called. I don't know how I'm pronouncing it right, but.
Did you see that other documentary about bees? Bee Movie?
I don't know that that's a documentary, Chad.
Oh, that was not a documentary.
It's a dramatization.
Oh, I see. I didn't know that. Okay, well, there you go.
Jerry Seinfeld is not actually a bee.
Really? What is he?
He is an aging baseball fan.
He is that. He's kind of a baseball fan. He's a fan of the Mets. So Derek Dietrich's back. I don't see any way. I'm not sure he cracks this roster. Like I said, it's a minor league invite. Or minor league contract with an invite to spring training.
I don't know. This is what worries me or whatever. But Derek Dietrich, if he hits 400 in the spring, he's going to make the team.
I guess. And who do you have him on the team over? I guess maybe Van Meter?
It's Van Meter if he's got a shot. Hell, they might put him on there ahead of Blandino.
Or Blandino or Kyle Farmer. I think Kyle Farmer's probably close to a lock.
Yeah, I think
For whatever reason. I don't know. I thought Dietrich did all the antics. That's what we're talking about, antics, last year. You know, a guy that's trying to get a fan base to love him and, you know, maybe secure a future in a city. I thought it was pretty smart from a business standpoint. If he just hit decent the rest of the season, he's probably guaranteed on this team. And now we're kind of talking to him, maybe not, but he's fun, I guess. Last 57 games he played last year, he hit .099.
Well, back to the topic of Billy Hamilton.
That's right. He hit two home runs, but here you go. Trivia time. We talked about your prediction. He hit two home runs in the last 57 games of the year. How many times was he hit by pitches?
I don't know, 8?
Wrong. I mean, two home runs, 12 total hits, including the home runs, hit by 17 pitches. His on-base percentage, he hit .099, but his on-base percentage was .283.
The man knew his strengths and his limitations.
He leaned into his strengths, I guess, right?
Yeah.
There we go. Sal Romano, we talked last week, Jason Linden and I, about Sal Romano was designated for assignment because the Reds needed his 40-man roster spot for right-handed reliever Pedro Strop. You had a really bad Pedro Strop related joke on Twitter this week.
Didn't like that?
I approved of it.
Really clever.
It was pretty clever. You want to recreate it or make a
better Twitter? You guys were talking about hope is not a strategy. And I started thinking, and then he talked, Pedro Strop, his name is Strategy Hope. Strop.
So at some in some games this year, Strop will be a strategy.
Yeah, it'll be like the strategery.
Ooh, strategery. So Sal Romano was designated for assignment, and Jason and I both expected someone to claim him. He's got a live arm. He's relatively young. I could see him being a fifth starter for somebody, you know, the Marlins or somebody. I don't know. Or at least in somebody's bullpen. I mean, he throws 98. But no one claimed him on waivers, and so the Reds retain him, and he's outrighted to AAA Louisville. And I think that really – and the Reds also extended him an invitation to big league spring training as a non-roster player. It's Sal Romano. We're not talking about Pedro Martinez here or Luis Castillo or name your good pitcher here. But I like keeping that kind of depth in the organization. I'm okay with it.
Sure. So I want to. I do have a question here, though, about this idea of extending invitations, and I don't really know what the import of that is. I mean, I feel like they could always just grab a guy from one field and say, "Come on over here today. We want to do something." So maybe they get better meal money or some kind of a deal when they're invited to big league camp. But do you think that they actually extend an invitation, like a written engraved, kind of like a wedding? Oh, the Cincinnati Reds cordially invite you and a guest.
Yeah. Plus one.
Oh. Plus one. Please, artists, we'd be like, Sal Romano's got to pick fish or chicken.
Right. He's got to select his meal. Oh, I like this. I like this idea. I hope there are actual engraved invitations, and I want to see those. If not, there should be.
Should do this. They definitely should do this.
They'd set them apart. They'd get all the minor league free agents out there, right? Just because they're a classy organization. I love it. I'm never going to be able to say extended an invitation to big league spring training without thinking of that again. So thank you for that, Chris.
Anytime.
Now the other big news before we get into a little bit of viewer mail, and this was extremely big news: Shogo Akiyama. You've heard of Shogo Akiyama? He's the Japanese player who's coming to America for the first time. And, he's got Japanese media following around everywhere. And, of course, a lot of local media as well, because this is a big deal, the first Japanese player to play for the Reds. And, yeah, he's a pretty good player as well. And so he steps into the cage his first day. Pitchers and catchers are there, and he comes in to hit. A lot of the Reds position players have already reported as well. He steps into the cage, takes a little practice swing. The bat and practice pitcher delivers, and Akiyama swings and misses. He absolutely whiffed on his first batting practice pitch in the States. And I was ready to void the contract at that point.
Is that
drastic?
I don't know. Maybe a bit of an overreaction, but, you know.
Maybe.
You do you.
He kind of stepped out of the box and kind of laughed about it and I think was embarrassed. But he started roping pitches all over the place after that. But Shogo Akiyama, a lot of coverage here in the early days of spring training about meeting his new teammates and good picture of him and Suarez talking, and then and also if you haven't seen any of the pictures, Suarez is there and he's smiling at every picture because he's Eugenio Suarez. But man, you got to go if you haven't seen it. Go look at his hair; it's glorious. It's still white, but it's just not white in the way that mine's turning white.
And I think you ought to look at that pitch that Akiyama, the swings that Akiyama is putting in that batting cage. Because they're probably the worst swing I've seen a major league hitter take since, I don't know, what, Bernie Carbo in the 1975 World Series.
Right. Yeah. But you also have to consider he's probably jet lagged still.
He looked like he was a right-handed batter in the left-handed batter's box.
Or as we call it, Tucker Barnhart. No.
Oh!
Wait a minute. Hold on. Yeah. Yeah. We got a good question about Akiyama later, so we're going to talk about him a little bit, and I'm terribly excited about Shogo Akiyama, mostly because, man, it's fun to say Shogo Akiyama. That's great. It's the new Luis Alberto. Going to be Shogo. Let's answer some viewer mail questions, shall we, Chris Garber?
Let's do it.
These, Tone as Loke always, what's that?
Said as Tone Loke once said. Let's do it.
Oh, man. Tone Loke. Really? Before we get into viewer mail, Chris, I got to give our listeners a peek behind the curtain. Before we started recording, somehow we engaged in a conversation about one Charles Nelson Reilly.
I mean, you say somehow, but the truth of it, folks, is that every Thursday, Chad and I hop on the phone and talk for 35, 40 minutes about famed actor and comedian Charles Nelson Reilly.
And usually
this was our normal conversation, just happened to be recording a podcast after it.
You sold me out. I didn't want anybody to know that particular element of my personality, but thank you. Usually it devolves into a really in-depth discussion about Match Game, the great NBC game show that ran in the late 60s, mid to late 60s, and then came back in the 70s and was a major success when it came back in the...
Didn't they have it out last year?
Oh, it's back, I think. Yeah, I've not watched it.
Alec Baldwin?
Oh, is it Alec Baldwin, really?
I think it is. He doesn't have... I'm not sure if he received Gene Rayburn's two-foot-long microphone or not.
Gene Rayburn, the best host of any
game
show ever. And microphone, it kind of was a predecessor before Bob Barker became famous for his ridiculous microphone. But, man, I'm all in for Gene Rayburn. So, anyway, Charles Nelson Reilly, I've learned here recently, Chris, that you are a huge fan of Charles Nelson Reilly. Is this true or not true?
Big fan. I was a big Match Game watcher as a kid. And, Charles Nelson Reilly was a unique character. He was, as we used to say, he flamboyant performer.
Yeah.
He was as entertaining as can be.
Oh,
and he was also the most famous person to share my birthday at the time.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah.
You want to know who mine is?
Who is it?
Reds related. I've got two Reds related birthday shares. Brandon Phillips and Nick Senzel.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, not bad, huh?
Yeah, that's very good. I've since I've grown up a little bit, the Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Patrick Dempsey also share my birthday.
Nice.
Liam Hemsworth. Which I think is the Thor guy?
No, I think that's Chris Hemsworth, right?
I don't know. I don't know
Is Liam Hemsworth? Did you make that up?
I think there's a Liam Hemsworth. I don't know. He's a brother. So apparently he's Thor's brother, but not the...
Thor's brother. So Loki.
Yeah.
A little comic book reference for you there, listeners. I'm a big comic book fan.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
This was a guy. He was in the Hunger Game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah. Anyway.
Wait, hold on. I got to tell you mine. Kawhi Leonard.
Ooh.
Charlemagne the God. Whoever that is. Colin Jost, who is punching way above his weight class.
No kidding.
Oh, my gosh. What's that all about? Who else is there? There's somebody else here. I'm scrolling to find out.
Dabney Coleman?
Is that true? Please tell me that's true.
I was hoping it is.
Oh, man. We're going to say yes. Dabney Coleman. So, but back to Match Game, because that's the purpose of this podcast. If you've not seen Match Game 73 or whatever, you know, they called it, they changed the name every year back then, but that was the funniest. And yes, Charles Nelson Reilly was absolutely the most amazing panelist on that. I mean, there were some other good ones. Richard Dawson was fantastic.
He was.
What was the name of? Brett Summers?
Brett Summers, yeah. Brett Summers. Gosh. There was Betty White was on there quite a bit.
Yes. Fanny Flagg.
That show was so good.
That show was amazing.
Very racy humor.
It was, but Charles Nelson Reilly stood above everyone else, right?
Yeah, he was. You know, there was a whole stretch on that show. So Charles Nelson Reilly had a nice head of hair, but it turned out the whole thing was a wig.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
And there was one stretch of the show where his wig had been, at least this is what they kind of said, his wig had been sent to New York for some sort of some sort of refinement or something. I don't know what. So he was forced to appear in the show wearing hats for a few days of Match Game episodes where he was wearing a hat that he wouldn't take off his head.
He's one of the funniest people that ever lived. Just a brilliant, funny guy.
Yeah. There's a show. I mean, he had a really. I'm going to get too much Charles Nelson Reilly. I'll save that for my CNR podcast.
Yeah. We need to have a Match Game / Charles Nelson Reilly podcast. Yeah. Maybe for Patreon subscribers.
Yeah, when he was a kid, there was like a circus fire that he was in. Like, he was a kid at the circus, and the tent burned down, and it killed like – like many, many people.
That's not funny at all.
No, no. So he never, like, he never again attended like any kind of a show, which is odd because he was, you know, a performer,
right,
on Broadway and everything. But he never like went in the audience because he was afraid of.
Wow.
Yeah. There's a movie there was a movie right before he died called Life of Riley, which is kind of a part of a stage show that he did, and like a one man show, and then some stuff at his house. But really interesting guy. And his best friend as an adult was the actor Burt Reynolds. Kind of a real odd couple.
Hold on. Are you serious?
I'm not lying. Burt Reynolds they were best friends. And Burt Reynolds, you know, lived in down in Florida, kind of in the South Florida area. And he built a theater, like a pretty famous theater for the area. And, you know, I don't know if he did it just for this, but he invited Charles Nelson Reilly to move to Florida and teach acting classes. And he did it.
Oh, my gosh.
Left Hollywood and lived in Florida for quite some time.
So many people have turned off this podcast by now, but I'm just telling you, I would give a significant portion of my net worth to be in a room with Burt Reynolds and Charles Nelson Reilly circa, you know, like 1979.
Oh, my God. That would have been amazing.
Incredible. Charles Nelson Reilly, legend. Let's get back to where we were starting to go about 30 minutes ago, which was viewer mail. As always, actual letters from actual viewers, as Chris constantly reminds me. Jeff Euchler asks, these questions, by the way, can be submitted at patreon.com/redlegradio. You support the podcast, you get a chance to ask, you get priority on the questions, and these are some of the questions we've received this week. Jeff Euchler asks, when will we get a Red Leg Nation calendar? I'm thinking, it gets better.
Bill Lack, Mr. March? Is that what I don't want to step on somebody's joke, but.
Oh, you're getting there. I'm thinking a shirtless Doug Gray hunched over his computer. Bill Lack in a towel chasing kids off his lawn, etc. It would be nice to put a face to the voices and authors, so why not put out a little more?
God.
Well, in my case, it would be putting out a little more.
I love it. I think this is great, Chad. I'd like to, my suggestion for you is you're riding one of those old-timey bicycles with one big wheel.
Shirtless, of course.
Well, if that's the theme.
That's going to have to be the theme. Okay, so I'm riding one of those big old-timey bicycles.
Your straw hat.
What's your month going to be? Let me think.
Oh, I'm not in it.
No, you're in it. I don't know what you're doing. You've got to be in it.
I'm peeking through the slats in a fence.
I can see Jason Lennon. He's reading some novel that's way above all of our heads, and he's got his shirtless, of course, and has his glasses, his reading glasses down on the tip of his nose and just kind of looking dreamily at the camera.
That's he's looking up like they just caught his attention.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But he's flexing, you know, that's Jason. Yeah, yeah. Oh, mercy. I'm not sure we can top that. We may have to end this one.
That's fine. No one's left listening anyways. Turn the lights off.
I don't know why anybody does listen. I went back and looked, and in the last 12 months, we have recorded 62 free podcasts. We're giving away for free. 62 in the last year. I mean, where are you going to get this kind of entertainment anywhere else? Don't answer that, because there's like a million places you can get better entertainment. But
no, he's the only podcast out.
Exactly. I think we are the only. It is pretty dangerous. Brian Bowdy asks, since Aladdin made both Chad and his wife's list of top movies. Wait a minute. How do you know what my wife's top movies are this year, Brian?
My wife!
Aladdin made our list of top movies in 2019. What are your three wishes for individual Reds players this year? I don't understand the structure of that question, but I love it.
Oh, it's a genie. It's a genie question. I got it.
Ah, there we go. Yes, I enjoyed the Aladdin remake. Did you see that, Chris? You have young children. Did you watch it?
No. I saw the one with Robin Williams.
Fantastic. Liked it because when the first one came out, I had a younger brother who was 12 years younger than me, and he loved it, so I watched it with him a bunch. And this time, you know, I have kids, and we watched it, the remake, and I thought it was pretty good, and Will Smith was fine as the genie. So go watch it. What are your three wishes for individual Reds players this year? I'm thinking a full year of health for Nick Senzel, a return to form for Joey Votto, and a Cy Young caliber season for Luis Castillo, says Brian. And I'm not sure I can do any better than that.
Yeah, sold.
Yeah.
Works.
Sign me up. Where do I sign that legislation? Yeah, I mean, if those three things happen, the Reds probably are, a 90-win team, I think. Or at least in the neighborhood. Now, Joe Farsing asks, Joe, who is legendary for asking ridiculous questions just so he can hear his name on the podcast.
I respect it.
Yeah, I don't have any problems with it. His question this week, Billy Paul or Xavier Paul? Now, Xavier Paul, I had to look him up to make sure he wasn't Xavier Nady, because I get those guys confused. How old do you think Xavier Paul is?
44 years old.
44 years old. I would have guessed about that. You know, former Red Xavier Paul. He's 34.
That is, wow.
Yeah, his career ended at age 29. Played for the Reds in 2012. I would have guessed like 2007. But
you say, yes.
Hit 314 for the Reds in 55 games. Decent little pinch hitter that year. In 2012, a good season for the Reds. He was a key part of that that good team. Was done a couple years later. So, Billy Paul, this is actually how we got on the Charles Nelson Riley kick before we went on the air. Billy Paul evidently was named Paul Williams, but known professionally as Billy Paul, a Grammy Award-winning American soul singer known for his 1972 number one single, Me and Mrs. Jones.
They had a thing.
And
going on.
There you go. And Joe's next question was Me and Mrs. Jones versus Me and Chris Negron. So I'm going to take Xavier Paul and Joe and Chris Negron. What do you have? Joe.
I'm going to take Chris Jones, who is an afterthought Red. I believe, wasn't he?
Was he? I'm going to take Xavier Nady and Tracy Jones. That's where I'm going.
Chris Jones played in the 1991 Reds. Batted 292.
Wow, I wasn't born.
That is an obscure former Red, if I've ever heard of one.
That is the most obscure former Red, I think. And we did a full podcast once about obscure former Reds, and he was so obscure we couldn't even remember him.
So, yeah, I don't remember him. I just remember the name somehow. Yeah,
very impressive.
Anyway.
Mike Mannix asks at patreon.com/redlegradio. First of all, Mike Mannix, every time he asks a question, I'm going to have to stop and just, think about how glorious that name is. Mike Mannix. It's like if his name were Mike Man from Uncle.
Yeah, I mean, it's better. That's better than the actual name on the Mannix television program.
Oh, really?
What was Joe Mannix. Joe Mannix.
Why couldn't they come up with Mike Mannix? That's much better.
Well, I think the problem was the actor was Mike Connors. So I don't think that he was able to, he would have gotten too confused.
I guess, but he was played by Charles Nelson Reilly. So I'm not sure anyone would have. Wait a minute. I don't even know what that means.
Don't. Thanks.
Mike Mannix has a question specifically for you, Chris. Our Patreon subscribers are ignoring me now.
Fair enough.
I don't blame them. Do you have a question for Chris? Do you have an American League team you follow? I am a fellow Columbus resident. Find myself often surrounded by Tribe fans. Part of what I enjoy about sports is the social aspect, being able to talk about what our teams are doing or not doing. As such, I've been tempted to adopt the Indians as my American League team, despite them sharing the same city as the Browns. Is there something wrong with me? That's the question for you, Chris. Two questions. Do you have an American League team you follow, and is there something wrong with Mike Mannix?
There's never anything wrong with Mike Mannix.
No, never.
I will take the second question first. I think there's nothing wrong with that. If you are not in competition with your main team, you can cheer for your buddy's team or your neighbor's team or your kid's team or whatever, and it's fine. And I'm not anti-Cleveland Indian. I think they're, I'm all for them doing well. I'm more for them trading their best players to the Reds.
Please.
But if not, that's fine. To answer the first part, if you had asked me 4 months ago who my favorite team was in the American League, I would have said the Houston Astros. I had been seduced and hooked by their excellence and their excitement of their team, and now I'm very angry.
And seemingly because they did things the way we've been begging the Reds to do them. The analytics above everything.
Yeah, smarter than everybody.
Right.
I liked Jose Altuve quite a bit.
Sure.
And now I'm just have a hard time with the whole deal. So choose wisely.
But
the good news is they're my B team, so I can dump them.
Yeah, you don't have any angst over it. Absolutely. Now, we had another question that we'll just follow up with that. Jacob Root asks at patreon.com/redlegradio, have you ever handled something as poorly as the Astros handled today's apology/media availability? I saw the reports about this, and evidently it was pretty bad, but the way they handled all that. The Astros have really not covered themselves in glory, have they, in all this?
No, and I think it probably – I mean, it's obviously – I don't want to get too deep, but you start talking about culture, you know, whether you're at a workplace or whatever. And I think a lot of that comes from the top. And, you know, the general manager is gone and the manager is gone, but the owner's still there. And I think his attitude is probably the one that's driving the show there. And it's kind of a
– yeah,
you know, these guys look like my kids when they're forced to apologize to somebody.
Right, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry you got
offended.
Can I
go now? Right. Can I have my phone back?
All right.
I feel bad for Dusty Baker. I mean, he obviously knows what he's doing. But I feel like he's probably the best man they could have for this job.
I think so, yeah.
I mean, he's going to take it. He's going to be a shield for those guys, I think, for all season long. And let them, as they said 63 times today, move forward.
Right. Yeah, you know, we criticize Dusty, certainly on this podcast, a lot, and for good reasons. But Dusty has some magic dust in the regular season, and he's a good guy, and he's likable. And people don't really truly, no one really dislikes, you know, Dusty Baker, the person. And he's a good guy to kind of put there and cover up those mistakes, maybe, and to pretend like you've moved forward. But...
Well, and I mean, I watched him. He was the only guy who sounded sincere about the whole thing. You know, he's apologizing for some other guys, and he sounds like he's kind of broken up about it. So maybe they can, some of his decency can rub off on them. I don't know.
I don't know either. I just I don't know. The Astros, when it first came out, I was underwhelmed. I was like, whatever, everybody should be cheating. The more I hear about it, the more I'm like, oh man, they're really, you know, whoever was the Astros fan that did the deep dive into when they were banging on the garbage cans or whatever, and man, it looks really bad. I've come around on how bad that stuff is.
Well, and then there's the issue of these buzzers or whatever, some kind of a device that the
right, yeah,
you know, some kind of a zapper that they can push from the clubhouse that says, you know, fastball's coming. And you know, the story goes that Altuve, when he hit that home run off of Chapman, and I even at the time I said, how the heck did he think slider there? But he did, and he creamed it.
Now you know.
And I didn't watch every bit of it today, but they say today that the players seem to be scrupulously avoiding denying that they used any kind of a gizmo or a gadget.
I've been so complimentary of specifically Altuve and Alex Bregman. Yeah, I just love those guys. And now you got to wonder.
Well, they both came off like
just
jerks today.
Yeah. But we didn't answer Jacob Rube's question. Did you really use the term butthead on the podcast?
Yeah.
I love it. Jacob Rude's actual question was, have you ever handled something as poorly as the Astros handled that?
Oh, I'm sure I have.
I handled the basketball poorly when I played basketball in high school. Specifically in the game we were playing against the team we were tied with for first place, and tie game at the end of the game, and this is the John I. Burton Raiders we're playing against, and I have the ball near half court, and I'm trying to keep it from some guy, and I put it above my head, and then I put it behind my head. And then the guy just takes it from behind my head and goes down and dunks it to give him the lead. Now, we ended up winning the game, but at that time I thought,
whoops,
my coach is going to Bob Knight me in front of this packed house. And my coach had played for Bob Knight, so it wasn't unrealistic to think he might do that.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so anyway, that's the most poorly I've ever handled anything. Since then, I've been perfect in every way. Joe Farsing again. Are either of you in the best shape of your life? Reminder that round is indeed a shape. That's we have not seen too many of the reports yet this spring about such and such is in the best shape of his life. That's the most cliche article that gets written by every single beat writer every single spring about somebody for their particular team. Not seen any of those reports just yet, but I'm not in the best shape of my life. And when I was in the best shape of my life, I handed the ball to the other team and let them dunk it. So I'm not sure we need to.
Yeah, it's I try. I was at the gym last night working on the rowing machine.
Ooh.
Yeah, the problem is when I do the rowing machine, I get really, really sore. And it's because I continue to yank that rowing handle right into my gut.
If you just get rid of that gut.
I think I'd be fine. Yeah, I just bruised up belly because too fat to row.
I was on the elliptical yesterday, and I just, every second I'm on that thing, I'm like, no, I don't enjoy this. I want to go watch a ball game. Clayton Duncan asks, what are your realistic expectations for Shogo Akiyama?
Shogo Akiyama.
Realistic expectations for Shogo Akiyama. That is one of the most difficult questions I think we've ever had on viewer mail, because there's really no way to know. He's been really good in Japan for the Cebu Lions. And I don't know how much it translates. There have been studies, and it's, I think the way it works out, it's kind of like a, not quite AAA, maybe between AAA and the majors level of, maybe it's AAA, but, for example, last year at age 31, he hit 303, 392, 471 slugging. If he could hit, say, 300, 360 on base, 350 on base, 440, 450 slugging, man, that's pretty good. I will take that in America. That's,
oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. Can he do that? I think that's realistic. I mean, that's way way below his career numbers in Japan. I don't know. You have any realistic expectations?
I don't know what's I'm the same as you. I don't know what's realistic. Yeah. I mean, that sounds good.
Yeah.
I
think he will get on base. His slugging may not be as much. I do expect him to get on base, and he'll help this team with scoring runs because he'll be on base. But my realistic expectations are that he's going to have a name this year that's really fun to say. Nathan Connor asks, how do you rate Rob Manfred? That's the commissioner of baseball, Chris. I know you didn't know that. How do you rate Rob Manfred's winner on a scale of 1 to 10? With 10 being Johnny Bench and 1 being Wayne Krenchicki. First of all, I think you got those flipped, I think. But, okay, we'll go with your scale, Nathan. His rap sheet is pretty long. The minor league situation, handling of the sign stealing, expanded playoff proposal, endorsement of the Tampa Bay Rays sister city concept, .. That's an ellipsis. I'm forgetting something, he says. He's really unpopular, and that can't be good heading into CBA negotiations. So how do you rate Rob Manfred's winner on a scale of 1 to 10? I'll let you answer that, but I'm going to say, before you answer that, I'm not sure he is really unpopular. Because the only people that matter for his unpopularity are the 30 owners around Major League Baseball. And are they is he unpopular with them?
That's where my head was going to go. I don't think it matters how popular he is with fans. I mean, it kind even going in the CBA, I mean, it kind of matters, I guess, if the Players Association is unhappy. But I haven't heard a whole lot of – I mean, there's been complaining. Trevor Bauer has an opinion on things about expanded playoffs. But I don't know that there's a whole lot of people say, players up in arms about, he's had a terrible winter. He's trying to make money. That's what he's trying to do. He's trying to grow the sport, and in his world, grow the sport means grow the revenues.
Yeah,
which is pretty simple.
Which is what his constituency wants him to do.
Yeah, I'm not saying he's doing a bad job at all. I don't, as a fan, I don't like any of the suggestions he's come up with. But if that's what he's being paid to do.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that among fans, it's really low in terms of where I'll rate him a 3. The thing that I, from a fan's perspective, the thing that I don't like about Rob Manfred is that he is making me long for the days of Bud Selig. Because Bud Selig was the worst, the absolute worst. But at least you kind of felt like he liked baseball. I think Rob Manfred likes cash, which is probably his job, frankly. We gotta be honest about that.
Gosh. Yeah, if you think about Selig is for all the faults and criticism of Selig, Selig is a guy who loved baseball and had money, and so he bought a baseball team.
Yeah.
And he kind of found himself in the commissioner's role. But Manfred's a career guy. I mean, he's a, say it, a lawyer. And a guy who, you know, he worked for the Major League Baseball. I mean, he worked for the, I guess he worked for the Brewers first, but it was a job for him. And he may love baseball too, but he didn't kind of go out of his way to pay to be involved in the game.
Right. Yeah, I think there, but for the grace of God go I, you know, you and I could have been Selig. You know, if we'd have run into a bunch of money, I'd probably buy a team. It'd be fun. And, you know, I could see that. But then again, Manfred, we're both lawyers. So let's move on to the next question. You want to?
Yep.
Hooper Powell. Our guy Hooper Powell. You remember Hooper. You met Hooper.
Sure. Okay.
Hooper asks, seeing that you had a podcast on the Oscars, did you listen to my Oscars podcast, Chris?
I did not, Chad. I was in Los Angeles on Sunday night and Monday.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you go to the Oscars?
I did not. My flight was delayed, and so I landed, and I got to the hotel to see the I'm not going to say it because it's a spoiler. The gentleman collecting his Best Picture trophy.
Now, you can say it. I already did a whole podcast about it.
I can't say his name. I don't know how to say it.
Oh, there you go. Okay, Bong Joon-ho. Thank you. Hooper, I seen that you had a podcast on the Oscars. Your favorite Patrick Swayze movie, Roadhouse, came to mind. I'm not sure how you got there, Hooper, but I appreciate that. I'm okay.
Fair.
I was wondering.
Tough but fair.
Tough but fair. I was wondering which Reds player, past or present, would be your Dalton. Dalton, of course, the Patrick Swayze character from Roadhouse. Which Reds player, past or present? These questions are getting better.
All right. This is good. And I have an answer. I've had something I've been wanting to talk about, and this is my excuse. Okay. Can I answer this one first?
Wait a minute. Is it Charles Nelson Reilly?
It's not. Okay. Not.
Okay.
So
go ahead.
As I've been sitting here, I was made aware of a video that's on YouTube. And this is a home video from the stands of the 1973 National League Championship Series Game 3, also known as the Pete Rose Bud Harrelson fight game. And it's I encourage anybody listening to this to, once you're done, go into YouTube and search for Mets versus Reds NLCS 1973 Game 3. And it's just fascinating. But there's a video of the fight, and you see Rose getting pulled out. And then you see Joe Morgan beefing at somebody. And then you see my candidate for the Reds, Dalton, Pedro Bourbon, going nuts in a Puig or Garrett style fighting the entire team stunt. So I, you know, we read about it and we'd seen tiny, tiny bits of it and still photos, but this is the first time I've seen like really good video of this fracas. And then you'll see at some point somebody has a Reds pennant on a stick and they light it on fire and it's being held up in front of the camera while the fight is still going on. There's a big red machine pennant just burning into ash.
I love it. Did Pedro Bourbon land a roundhouse kick?
No, he did not.
Oh,
I didn't
man.
See.
Clearly, it's got to be Pedro Bourbon. That's outstanding. Now, Hooper had a second question. I was wondering which Reds player, past or present. No, I already answered that one. Oh, gosh. I've lost control of this podcast already. Go look up clips of Charles Nelson Reilly. Also, forgot to ask, Ellis Valentine or Greg the Hammer Valentine? Now, Ellis Valentine, former baseball player, I had to look up. Maybe I'm exposing something about myself. I had to look up Greg the Hammer Valentine. Do you know who that is?
I do.
Really?
Part of the Hart Foundation.
Part of the what?
The
what is
Hart
that?
Foundation. It was a tag team.
What?
With yes, Jimmy Hart was the manager, and Jim the Anvil Neidhart was the was one of the wrestlers, and then Greg the Hammer Valentine was one of the others.
Well, I had to Wikipedia Greg the Hammer Valentine, because I'm not a professional.
Oh, Brett, I'm sorry.
I'm not a wrestling guy. I don't know. Whatever. If you like wrestling, great. I never knew how many people liked wrestling until I joined Twitter.com. But I looked him up, and you've got to go to Greg Valentine's page on Wikipedia, because that is the best Wikipedia picture that anyone has in the history of Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia. Greg the Hammer Valentine.
How? So it looks pretty much like what you would imagine a wrestler from the mid-80s appearing at a apparently some sort of Holiday Inn where there is a convention of old wrestlers.
Yeah, like a 5x7 banner hanging behind him. Send the
Did
hammer.
You see the phone? Did you see the phone he has? Oh,
no, I hadn't noticed that. It's a brick.
It looks like a video game that my daughter had when she was one.
He's playing Tetris on that thing.
I don't think you can play Tetris on that thing. No. It's only got four buttons.
Go look at this picture. Greg the Hammer Valentine. Okay, I'm glad I know about this guy.
2010, that picture. But still, that's like not even a jitterbug.
That is amazing.
Yeah, it's like one of the cameras, but also a pair of binoculars type things.
This is the worst podcast ever for listeners, but it's the most fun I've ever had. So,
sorry, guys.
Andrew Scott Wills, we got to move on because we got to get out of here. Andrew Scott Wills asks, how many wins do you think the Pirates will get this season? Hash Brown, actual viewer mail. I'm gonna say nine. Nine wins for the Pirates this season.
The whole season?
The whole season, yes.
It's all opponents?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I'm gonna do like they're doing Price is Right and say one.
There you go. You're going to win the Showcase Showdown, I'm afraid. Jacob Rood, we already did that one, Jacob. Sorry, I'm not going to ask your question twice. Last Patreon question, Joe Farsing again. If you were a type of underwear, what would you be? Oh, my gosh. If you were a type of underwear, what would you be? I have lack as a banana hammock guy myself. And yes, I do ask dumb questions for the sole purpose of hearing my name, says Joe.
What time is it?
We're not answering that one. One last question. This one comes from, two more questions. One comes from Philip Razor on twitter.com/redlegradio. His question is this. He literally types out a question, prints it off, and signs his name. So I've got to, if you do that, I'm probably going to answer your question. Dear Red Leg Nation Radio. It's business, it's a business letter. With the return of Derek Dietrich on a minor league deal, what do you think of the new Wes Anderson trailer? Have you seen the new Wes Anderson trailer?
No, what is it here?
Really? You've not seen the, it just came out this week. Wes Anderson, of course, you know, I like Wes Anderson. Have you noticed, you may have noticed that if you've listened to the podcast. Wes Anderson has a new movie out called the, or is coming out in 2020 called The French Dispatch. And of course, that's a perfect name for Wes Anderson.
I feel like, is there a website that like Wes Anderson movie name generator?
Probably. This one came. The actual full name of it is even more Wes Anderson. The French Dispatch of the Liberty, Kansas Evening Sun.
Oh, my God. I'm looking at this trailer right now. You, and I 100% guarantee this is made of clips from old Wes Anderson movies.
Someone suggested, I can't remember, I wish I could remember now so I could give them credit on the podcast. Someone suggested on my Twitter feed that what they did was someone fed, I think it might have been Aaron Lair, actually. Someone fed all of Wes Anderson's movies into a computer and they generated a Wes Anderson movie. The trailer looks like every Wes Anderson movie, and it's the most amazing trailer I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, God, I can't do it.
You don't like Wes?
I just, it's too twee. I can't
it is twee.
Do it.
I'm desperately in love with every Wes Anderson movie. He's my favorite movie director, and it's not even close.
Oh, man. I got to watch, I got to go watch the Hateful Eight or something after watching this trailer.
that's the other end of the spectrum. But the Grand Budapest Hotel, you don't like it.
What's the one with the train? That one was brutal.
Oh, come on. The Darjeeling Limited.
Oh, hey, we're ironic on a train.
What about the one they're ironic at a hotel or the one that they're ironic in a house in Manhattan, which was actually in Harlem? That's the Royal Tenenbaums, the best of the West Tenenbaums.
I enjoyed that one.
Wes Anderson movies. We're on a new island of New Penzance and being ironic. That's
what's the one with the Moonrise kids?
Kingdom. That's Moonrise Kingdom.
I like that one, actually. That was a good movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie. They're all great. Wes Anderson is the greatest artist working in any medium today. You disagree with that?
Yeah, Lizzo.
Well, she is 100% pure. Pete Wills asks, at Petros Wills on twitter.com/redlegradio, is it opening day yet? I'll let you take this one.
Checking.
Do a little Googling. Okay, no.
Alexa, when is opening day? Is it today?
No.
Sorry.
All right, Chris, that's it for today. You have any final thoughts?
Sorry, Alexa's giving me a treatise on opening day in the background here.
I heard that. You literally asked Alexa.
It's in the other room. I didn't think it could hear me.
Can I tell you about the time on New Year's Eve when we had some people over? My brother, it was when we first got an Amazon Echo, and my brother spent the whole evening yelling at Alexia. I mean, screaming at Alexia.
I mean, it wouldn't respond, then he got madder and madder.
He just kept getting madder. It was the best night of my life.
That's fantastic. Oh, I would sit it there.
Any final thoughts before we end it?
Go Reds.
Go
when's,
Reds.
When's the first game on television? Do we know that?
Ask Alexia.
I'm going to.
Okay, I'll wait for you to do that. When is the first game on television? I don't know. It's going to be soon, probably. They play these spring training games.
Yeah, they do. All right, I give up. Yeah, folks, there we go. Just Google it.
Google it yourself. Ask Alexia yourself. For Chris Garber, Jeff Reed, Charles Nelson Riley, and Greg the Hammer Valentine, this is Chad Dotson saying, so long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. And join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger, because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.